The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Glory America, bonjour, hi, candidate, to you and Inside the Beltway on July 15, in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm headed to Studio Winterfell, getting out of the swamp after today's show. Let me begin with the news. Ivana Trump, the ex-wife of former President Trump, is a very successful businesswoman in her own right, mother of Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump. Ivanka Trump passed away yesterday at the age of 73. Prayers for her and her family as they grieve the loss, especially the children of their mother. Yesterday, I said on the show that 9.1% inflation was probably going to be the peak because the Fed was going to raise interest rates another 0.75 point. I was wrong. After the show, the producer price gains from June were published. Producer level inflation, that's the wholesale level, went up 11.3% on an annual rate in the month of June. That's staggering. That money is coming right at you. That inflation is coming right at you as a consumer. So 9.1%, even though gas has begun to drop, that's only the most visible part of our inflationary spiral. I don't know that we're going to drop in when the July number is released in August. That's really bad news. A little bit of good news. June retail sales rose after dropping the month before. And they'll probably go up again in the next month at higher prices because Prime Day. I mean, I think Americans spent $12 billion, much of it on Prime, Amazon Prime Day. And I'm happy about that because that's the only stock I own. That and Palantir. I have a few shares at Palantir outside of mutual funds because I'm not smart enough to play the market. So I just buy Amazon and mutual funds and a little stake in Palantir. And I'll tell you right now, the drive to find value will lead people towards reliable, I mean, Procter & Gamble stuff, Amazon stuff, stuff like that. Best news of the morning, and I'll go to worst news of the morning. Best news of the morning, Manchin says he will not support new climate spending or tax hikes on wealthy, according to the Washington Post. New York Times, headline as well, Manchin pulls plug on climate and tax talks, shrinking domestic plant. Senator Joe Manchin, the third Democrat of West Virginia, pulled the plug on Thursday on negotiations to salvage key pieces of President Biden's agenda, informing his party's leader that he would not support funding for climate or energy programs or raising taxes on wealthy Americans and corporations. This is such good news because more spending and tax hikes would take a recession and turn it into maybe a depression, and it would have fueled inflation. It's like the exact opposite of what to do. This is why you cannot vote for any Democrat at any level. Not named Joe Manchin. He's not up this year because there aren't any of them left. The other ones have gone woke and left. This has left the Democrats with only one option, and it's a good option. Chuck Schumer announced he's going to move the CHIPS bill. Now, this is what Micron.com. Micron.com is a sponsor of this show. And Mr. Beard was on from Micron, and we tried to explain to you this week. I've been a longtime supporter of CHIPS. I think that's why they asked to sponsor some spots on the show, is because they know that my audience knows what I believe about chip industry, is that you need oxygen, water, food, and chips to survive in America. Oxygen, water, food, and chips. In that order. Oxygen, water, food, and semiconductor chips. And the CHIPS Act will get us the fabrication footprint that we need to run a modern military, to run a modern economy, to keep pace with China. And Micron.com wants CHIPS Act passed. They've tried to persuade people on this show. I've given them a forum to do so. And I'm telling you now, completely independent of that, they might never have come. They might never come back. We need the CHIPS Act. I hope they put some of the fabrication plants in northeastern Ohio near the water. You need water for chips. And I hope they go up there and say, hey, you know what? Warren, Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio, that's exactly where we want to produce chips and send them everywhere in the country. But whatever it is that they negotiate over the next 3 weeks, that's good news. China's economy, speaking of chips and an economy that is being driven by chips, Micron does not want China to build more chips. But We all want chips built in the United States, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, left, right. You don't want these things made in China. China's economy barely grew in the weakest quarter since the Wuhan lockdown. So they have hit a wall because they really had a terrible vaccine as opposed to our vaccine. They locked everyone down. They shut down their economy. The supply chain effects will hit us for a long time. But they only grew by 0.4%. And that narrowly misses the second quarter contraction, as the Financial Times reports this morning. So that's the bad news, because we want China to grow economically and to not grow in its defense spending. But that's not likely to happen. All right, Liz Truss. There are five conservatives left in the race to become the British prime minister. Boris Johnson is a lame duck. Everybody knows it. He'll be gone by the first week in September. So there are they had their latest round of voting yesterday, and they got down to five. Those five are Rishi Sunak, who's would be a liberal Republican in America. And there aren't any liberal Republicans left in America. There used to be the Nelson Rockefellers and the people that they've all become Democrats, and then they all became woke. There are moderate Republicans like Susan Collins and Rob Portman and a bunch of others. And I guess Rishi would say, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he's kind of with them, but he raised taxes a lot. He's not a Thatcherite, and he wasn't for Brexit. He's still in the race. Penny Mordaunt got 101 votes yesterday, increasing his total 13. Penny Mordaunt picked up 16 and got up to 83. Liz Truss, the foreign secretary right now, got up to 64. She increased 14. Kemi Badenoch up to 49. She got up 9. Tom Tugendhat got 32. He lost 5, but he's still in the hunt. And Suella Braverman was eliminated. And so there are right now at least 27 votes that have to go somewhere else. And there's a big effort on the Tory right to rally around Liz Truss. Because although she was a Remainer, she became an ardent Brexiteer. She has very good credentials on national security. So does Penny Mordaunt. Look, I'm not a Brit, not my election, not my country, but they are an ally and they are a nuclear power. So it matters to us a lot. I think I'd prefer Liz Truss from this group. Tommy Tugendhat, had he served in a major office of state, would have mattered a lot. I wouldn't be surprised. They have a debate tonight, and they have a debate on Sunday. Then they have three more rounds of voting next week to get down to two, and then they ask the 200,000 dues-paying members of the Tory party to pick between those two. And I would not be surprised to see Tugendhat support Liz Truss, cut a deal to become the Minister of Defense, if Ben Wallace doesn't want to do it. Ben Wallace could have been winning this race. Ben Wallace passed by the chance to be the prime minister. But Lord Frost came out, and he's the guy who negotiated Brexit with Boris. He's the big gun on the right when it comes to Brexit. And he said, rally around Liz Truss, and he blasted. They play hardball over there. It's real Game of Thrones stuff this weekend. And I will keep you posted on Monday. I'll tell you a little bit more about Liz Truss afterwards. Because at this point, the way it's gone, I just read the Telegraph and the Financial Times, and I hope the Tories vote for Liz Truss. And I think she might be Maggie Thatcher 2.0. We will find out. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Welcome back, America, to Hewitt. Sonny Bunch is the official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show. He's also the host of Bulwark Goes to the Movies and Across the Movie Aisle. And this weekend, we're talking about Thor, whatever the subtitle is. And I say that because having seen it yesterday, I walked out of the theater and said to son number one, I think the Marvel Universe is played out. And now Sonny Bunch joins us to tell us what a real film critic thinks. Sonny, good morning.
Hey, Hugh. I don't think that... Well, I don't think the Marvel Universe is played out economically or financially, right?
This I agree.
Huge box office, big opening weekend for this last weekend. Made $144 million or something. And, you know, these movies are still the biggest draw at the domestic box office, you know, opening weekends over the run of their lives, whatever. You know, the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, which got a B+ from CinemaScore, was not a huge hit with audiences. That movie still made $950 million worldwide without China, you know. This one, again, opened pretty big, $144 million. So when we say played out, have to couch that with...
I said to him, right now there are people at work in a studio trying to figure out how to produce 100 more Marvel movies without a storyline that can conceivably be interesting after Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. They need to get to what they need is to get back to the... way of storytelling that had worked for them leading up to Avengers Endgame, which is having a bunch of interconnected movies that were essentially episodes of a TV show that all kind of, that were all building to a thing and were all pretty competent. I mean, my problem with Thor Love and Thunder, and I did not like this movie either, Hugh, and I don't think that you're wrong that the MCU is kind of played out right now. They're floundering. They don't know exactly what they're doing. They don't know exactly where they're going with it. They have some older characters who have been around for a while, like Doctor Strange and Thor, that they're still trying to, you know, keep audiences interested in while also introducing new characters like Shang-Chi and the Eternals. But they don't know really how to bring them together. I don't know. So Thor Love and Thunder, my problem with this movie is the same problem I had with its predecessor, Thor Ragnarok, which is that it's directed by a guy named Taika Waititi, who I don't really care for, but has really leaned into the whole, like, goofy Thor thing.
Camp.
You know, when Thor started, the first Thor movie was directed by Kenneth Branagh, and it was almost Shakespearean in tone. It was comic Shakespeare, but it was still, you know, Shakespearean in tone. It was serious. You know, it was an epic struggle about family and all that stuff. And Thor Love and Thunder, on the other hand, is just very... It tries too hard to be funny. It really does all this weird, goofy stuff. And it is almost painful for me to watch. Now, people really like Thor Ragnarok. I didn't like Thor Ragnarok. I gave it a bad review. I was one of the few critics to give it a bad review. But people really liked it. I don't know what happened over the last 5 years, but audiences and critics alike have kind of turned against this because this movie has gotten much cooler reviews, both from audiences and from critics. So
let me give you a theory and have you that you can only do the end of the world so many times. And so they're trying to introduce, quote, more human elements and more normal stuff. But and that's why Jane is back. But you can only threaten the end of the world with eternity and or whatever it is so many times. And they did the best end of the world series. So everything is now derivative. Russell Crowe, and this is a spoiler alert, I mean, they could have played that differently to build a Marvel universe encompassing the Greek gods, but they didn't. Maybe they will. I saw the Easter egg. I just think, Sonny, do you think they've got like 20 people not writing movies, but trying to figure out how to just put, you know, diagram a sentence that goes on infinitely?
More or less. There are things about this movie I did like. So here's the basic bare bones plot of it. A guy at the beginning of the film he's dying. His child dies. He makes it to his version of, you know, kind of an oasis paradise. And his God is there and says, "Why did you forsake us? Why did you let us die?" And the God is like, "I don't care about you. You live to serve me." Blah. And then this guy who is dying, whose family has died, decides to kill all the gods in the Marvel universe. And he's justified in doing this because, as we see, as you mentioned, in the scene with Russell Crowe, who is playing Zeus, all the gods are kind of jerks in the MCU. None of them care about themselves. Of course, the problem here is that Thor is a god, right? Now, there's an ontological problem with this whole plot, which is that none of these are actually gods, which we learn in the Thor movies. Thor is just an alien. He's just an alien with some magic, you know, magical science that is so advanced, it might as well be magic, right? Arthur C. Clarke's rule. Yeah. the idea that these are gods is, my question is, how do you define what a god is in the Marvel universe exactly? Is it just people, is it just superpowered beings that are worshipped? I don't know. Again, there's like a very basic definition problem with this movie.
Exactly,
that never,
on
really
point. 100%.
Never really want to deal with.
And Sonny, it's okay to be deist. It's okay to, but gods have got to be gods. And there are very few even works of epic fantasy that don't have Sorin living forever. I mean, gods have got to live forever, or they're not gods by definition. And H.L. Mencken did a famous essay on you know, the long trail of tears for dead gods that have been worshipped, like Moloch, or are no longer worshipped. We're down to like three: Allah, Yahweh, and Jesus. And so those are the three in the world. The rest of them are all gone. They're all dead. And I think that was sort of a commentary on it, but you know, it's not much of a plot.
No,
they're just more special people.
The plot is so bad here. Again,
yes.
for this definitional reason, but like just in terms of the actual storytelling, it's bad. Again, the tone of the film I would describe not as funny, but goofy. There's a difference between funny and goofy, and I'm having
where
trouble
is camp?
People.
Where is camp in that spectrum between
camp
funny
is
and
different.
Goofy?
Camp is when you make a movie. This is a fight I have with people sometimes. Camp is when you make a movie and you try really hard to make it good, and it's still very bad. When you have unintentionally made a bad movie, that's camp.
Oh,
I don't think you can intentionally do camp. I think camp is not a thing that you can strive for and achieve. You have to do it accidentally.
Well, that's interesting, Sonny. Is that a generally held position among film critics?
I don't know if it is. I know it is not a generally held opinion amongst the people I argue with about it. But this is, if you go back and read Sontag, if you go back and read, you know, Notes on Camp, that this is what she is getting at, which is that you have a thing. The thing is authentic in that it is trying to be one thing and it turns out to be something else.
You see, I thought of camp as dad jokes, and Thor is full of dad jokes. It's so bad. I mean, and there are some angles that you cover in your review in The Bulwark about the weapons, and there's some angles. It's just so bad as a plot. I mean, but the special effects are interesting. The lightning bolt isn't. But I mean, generally, they had to come up with another world-threatening, you know, eternity-ending. And after the Avengers, it just doesn't, you know, the payoff was the payoff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, they've got a real problem. We'll see what they manage to put together with all the multiverse stuff, but I think it's a bad time. We talked about this a little bit a few weeks back, but if you have kids and you're looking for something to go see, and you don't want to go see Thor, or you don't want to go see Thor again since there's not really anything else out in wide release this week, Marcel the Shell with the Shoes On, the stop motion animation picture.
Yes,
I loved it. I strong recommend on that one. It's a good family movie. It has opened wide now. It's in, you know, 2,500 screens, so it should be playing near you somewhere. I cannot promise that younger kids will be super into it. It is a little slow and a little bit quiet, but it's a very good movie about family and community and, you know, what it means to keep all that together.
You know, Sonny, when you said that, I talked to the fetchy Mrs. Hewitt about it. It's a hard sell. Like, you're the only thing that movie's got going for it after you've seen the trailer. Because stop animation is just not that appealing to people. Right?
Well, I can understand that. And it's a weird trailer, too. Though the trailer does kind of get at the slowness of it. It's a little bit slow. Again, I don't think it's going to be a great movie for, you know, your six-year-old. You're better off going to, you know, I don't know, the bad guys or whatever. Again, there's not really a ton out for kids.
No, I took them to the bad guys and they laughed hilariously through it because that's a pretty funny movie for 7 to 10 year olds.
Or Minions, Rise of Gru. You know, kids love I took my kids to see Minions, The Rise of Gru, and they have never laughed harder at anything in their life.
Oh, you're kidding. You're kidding.
I couldn't believe it.
That's good to know for parents out there. Sonny, last question. In terms of Blockbuster, there's some trailers down the road that we saw in Thor, and they pay a lot for those trailers. Is there anything you are waiting on the edge of your seat to see?
Well, I don't know about Blockbusters, but I do really like the trailer for Amsterdam. Did you get that one?
No, that was not attached, no.
Yeah, so Amsterdam is the new movie from the director of The Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle. Stars Christian Bale. It looks a little bit like a Coen Brothers movie. It's not a Coen Brothers movie, but it looks a little bit like a Coen Brothers movie. And I liked Coen Brothers. So I'm looking forward to that. But no, there's a dry stretch here coming up. You know, we are going to be hitting post the first weekend of August when Bullet Train comes out, the movie with Brad Pitt. I saw that trailer. I am kind of looking forward to that.
Haven't you seen that trailer 20 times? I've seen that trailer 20 times.
Well, we see all the trailers 20 times now because there are so many fewer movies. Yeah. I mean, there's only one big release every 2 weeks now, which I think is actually smart. I mean, I think Hollywood should get back to, instead of a tentpole every week, you know, a tentpole every 3 weeks, and then, you know, a little bit smaller movies in the interregnum. But I digress.
Well, I want to finish by going back to Elvis. I've made the recommendation to a number of people that they go see Elvis. It divides on a demographic line that's fairly significant. If you're under 50, you're not attracted to that movie. If you're over 50 and have even any kind of distant intimation of Elvis in your life, you will enjoy it greatly. What's been the overall grade on Elvis?
People like it. It's gotten solid. I think an A- from CinemaScore, which is solid. Critics are pretty positive on it. And you're right. It's definitely attracting an older audience. I mean, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the demographic breakdown, I think the second and third weekend, the second weekend, I think was older than the first weekend was in terms of, you know, older audiences. It's also attracting women. So it's attracting older women, which has been a demographic that has been loath to come back to movie theaters. And it's doing very well for itself. I mean, it's going to cross $100 million this weekend.
Tom Hanks already can still carry a movie. And Elvis, of course. Sonny Bunch, follow him on Twitter, @SonnyBunch. He earned his airline miles this week. And, of course, The Bulwark Goes to the Movie is one podcast. Across the Movie Aisle is another podcast. They are both worth listening to if you're a movie aficionado. Thank you, Sonny Bunch. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. Time for the Poet Laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. You know, the last 2 weeks have been a little unusual for me. I hear echoes of something, but I can't just put my finger on it. But I've tried to. The market is in tatters and everyone's obsessing. But the media is telling us inflation is a blessing. The Post and Times in chorus have been singing the same song. They say the cost of living has been far too low too long. Editorial opinion, every comment, every letter, all are in agreement that recession's even better. Biden has a program, and the reason he began it is he knows that rising prices are a way to save the planet. And if you're in agreement, well, it's time to do your part. Go visit a museum, glue yourself to works of art. For the earth has been exploited, time to lighten up the load. So we better tell the farmers, hey, start learning how to code. If you're feeling cold this winter, why not roll up in your rugs? And if you're getting hungry, here's a burger made of bugs. The streets are filled with garbage. Violent criminals are lurking. But they say that their statistics indicate reforms are working. There's a fight in Central Europe. Have you seen the latest meme? Go to TikTok and they'll tell you that's just letting off some steam. Well, at least we have some comfort from the White House press release, where they tell us pain is pleasure, and that war, of course, is peace. That's Echoes of Something by Tarzana Joe.
It's Echoes of 1978. Joe, what year did you graduate from Demon Deacon Land?
79. And by the way, Demon Deacon had a great first round in the British Open.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. But, you came out. I was on a special report on Wednesday night. I pointed out I got out when inflation was 7.6. You got out when inflation was 11.3. And then we were both early in our careers when inflation went to 13.5. Weren't those the good old days, Joe?
Yes. You looked out and you said, I'll never own anything.
I'll never own a thing.
A car.
I'm going to have a half grilled cheese tonight. I'm telling you, this cannot go on. But Tarzana Joe goes on and on. He is the Energizer Bunny of poetry. And you can reach him at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com for all your poetry needs. Rates are reasonable. Poems are wonderful. This will be posted at TarzanaJoe.com. If it's working, is it working, Joe?
Absolutely. Back on the beam.
Back on the beam, TarzanaJoe.com. But the people who need poetry, write to Joe. He hasn't raised his rates 9.1% in over a week.
No, I'm holding the line.
Holding the line for a week. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Hugh.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.